Courageous and Journey. We are on part 6 of our 7-part series of mysticism and Kabbalah. And this is probably one of the most requested talks. So I put it near the end to make sure people come up to this point. A little technique of mine. if you don't mind, we're going to go a little bit deep tonight. We need full concentration. We won't go too long. But if you take your blackberries that you've been serving all day and put them away somewhere, or put them on mute, I appreciate that very much. You'd be disarmed, as I say. I appreciate it. Those of you who are here for the first time, my name is Rabbi Lawrence. We're going to take a journey this evening into one of the most misunderstood areas of Judaism. And my idea this evening that I want to do is to clarify an important area of Judaism that does have many practical implications. Okay, and the topic this evening is the Ayin Hara, the evil eye, and what's up with the red string? Let's start with a quick question for you, as I like to do. Put your hands up here if at some time in your life you have worn a red string. Wow. Put your hands up if you purchased that red string for an amount of money. Ali, so I'm going to ask Ali if she's buying, that's how she does. Ali, what did you pay for said red string?
I think you told us that we were going to get a deal, actually, and to wait until we went to a different shop, but I don't remember. Definitely too much.
Definitely too much. Would you say it was more than $1?
I think so, yes.
More than $5?
Probably not.
Or in Israel you bought it?
Yeah.
Oh, cut price in Israel, cut price. Anyone buy, thank you, Ali. Yeah, I didn't tell you to buy one over there. Anyone buy here in New York a red string? Oh, really? Yeah, you bought one over here? Do you mind asking how much you paid for it? No mind.
I actually don't remember, but it was through the Kabbalah Center, and it was like a very, very long one.
Wow. It paid more for length than that. By the foot.
I think it was like $15, but it lasted you like 2 years.
$15, $15. Okay, $18, $29. That's going to be our discussion this evening. What's up with evil eye, and can a red string do anything for you? Let's begin at the beginning. And it does actually go back quite a way back into Jewish history. If you look back into the Bible, into the Torah, there's a very interesting discussion. And let's start with two stories. What happens to those stories, and very strange consequences for both of them. Let's start with the story of Sarah. Everyone knows Sarah was Abraham's wife. And Sarah, like most of the matriarchs who came after her, had a lot of trouble having kids. And she tried for a long time. And her husband, Abraham, eventually married a second wife, which was allowed before the Torah was given back then. Nowadays, we don't marry more than one wife. What's the punishment for marrying more than one wife? More than one mother-in-law. I just had to bite my tongue for saying another joke. It wasn't easy, by the way. I had to control myself. However, the wife that he took was a woman called Hagar. And Hagar became very quickly pregnant with a child. And the relationship between Hagar and Sarah after this marriage of Abraham and Hagar became very, very tense and very, very difficult. And Hagar eventually started to show off and goad and put down Sarah. And it was Sarah's idea, by the way, that Abraham should take a second wife for himself so that he could have children. Hagar, however, we're told, looked down upon Sarah. And then it says something very interesting. Rashi, we've mentioned his name before, Rabbi Shlomo Yitzhaki, a French Jew who lived in the 1100s in the Episcopal Provence, who wrote what is considered to be the greatest commentary on the Torah. And his commentary, you should know, is not countless. It is not. It is considered to be the most, what called, Peshat-driven text, meaning the most easily understood text out of all the commentators. He says that Sarah did something to Hagar. Now, once again, you've got to trust me. It's unusual for Rashi to make such a comment. He only does it in some one other place, two other places in the entire Torah. He says that when Sarah saw that Hagar treated her this way, she puts an ayin hara onto her. That's what Rashi says. She puts an evil eye on Hagar. Let's jump forward a little bit. And let's jump forward to one of Sarah and Abraham's descendants. And that is Jacob. And Jacob had many, many children. These were eventually the 12 tribes of Jewish people. Each one of these men, we are told, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yud, Yisrael, Zvon, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Yosef, and Binyamin. See, I didn't understand the Jewish day school. These 12 sons, we are told, were extremely powerful people and had a tremendous physical presence. They were tall and they were strong and they were powerful, as were their daughters. Now, if you remember the story that there was a famine in the land, and these sons had to descend into Egypt to get food, where their brother Joseph had become vice for another story. And there's an interesting verse over there. It says that their father, Jacob, says, you better go down there and get us some food. However, when you enter into the city, please enter through different gates. Cities in those days were, think of like the old city of Jerusalem. There are different gates to get you in. And Jacob says, whatever you do, don't go in together as a bunch. When you go into Egypt, spread yourselves out. Comes along Rashi and says, what's up with that? Why would Jacob want them to go through different gates? And he gives the following very interesting answer. Rashi says, because had they gone through one gate, they would have got the iron harab. That's what Rashi says. And we still don't know what we're seeing here. And then we go a little bit later to Jewish history. And there was someone called Moses. And many times Moshe Rabbeinu was told by God to count the Jewish people. Take a census. Happens a number of times in the Torah. And it's a very special way that he was told to count the Jewish people. They don't know the method in Judaism that goes back thousands of years, how we traditionally counted Jewish people. Don't know how many Jewish people there are. We just took a census here in New York. You saw the advertisements on the bus, right? We need to know how many you are, because we're going to know how many schools to open, how many library books to put in there. So the Jewish people need to know how many Jews there were as well. We've got to count you every so often. We have 100,000 Jews leaving Egypt. How are we going to know how many there are? How many camels to buy? You don't want to know the method? Yeah. It's coins. We choose like money. That's right. It was actually half a shekel. It's called Hebrew Matzah Shekel. And what they would do is, everyone, no matter how rich or how poor they were, would give half a shekel into a kupah, into a box, whatever it was, a holding vessel. They would count up all those coins, and they would end up with a certain amount. All that money, by the way, would then go to the Mishkan for the temple. So it was given to charity. And notice that everyone gave the same amounts. Everyone felt equally committed to the great cause. And by counting those coins, they also knew how many Jewish people there were. And this is the way they used to do it. Many years later, there was someone called King David. And King David, for some reason, when he had to count soldiers and Jewish people, he didn't do that. And there was a terrible plague, and thousands of people died. Supposedly, according to the deeper commentators, because when he counted them 1, 2, 3, 4, rather than counting coins. Comes along our favorite commentator, Rashi, and he says, of course they died. The Ayin Hara was Sholet. The Ayin Hara, the evil eye, stuck onto them. And Moses, he knew what he was doing. He wouldn't let the evil eye be on these people. What is going on? What's this evil eye thing? Well, that's a cataract problem? Like Jews have been short-sighted since then? What's going on over here? What exactly is this thing called evil eye? Does it affect us today? Does it still have any power? And if it does, what can we do about it? And what should we do about it? I'm going to start by quoting, since it's a course on Kabbalah, some Zohar. And the Zohar says the following, if you ask me personally, pretty scary comment. Not that I won't scare you, but it does say this. And the Zohar says, a person possessed of an evil eye carries with him or her the eye of destroying negative force. Hence it is called in Kabbalah the destroyer of the world. Thou destroys. And people should be on their guard against them and not come near these people so that they should not be injured by them. Now, he doesn't say how they're going to be injured. He just says there is this thing called the evil eye and it has the power to destroy. If you look at most cultures around the world, they have some form of evil eye. Many countries do. Actually, has anyone seen the Turkish plane before? If you look on the tail of a Turkish plane, you will see a blue circle, and inside a green circle, I believe those are the colors. I checked it out. And that is meant to be?
Yellow and white.
Yellow. And it's there to defend against the evil eye. And if you go around any of these Middle Eastern countries, they have trees with certain eyeballs hanging on chains. If you go inside your average taxi in Israel, what a good place to have something with evil eye. You will see that a hamsa, a hand, it's a picture of an eyeball. Well, anyone know what other symbol they have? A fish. They have a fish. Eyeballs? Boy, is this Judaism? Is that what we're about? I don't want to hang a fish. I want to eat a fish. I'm the bagel person with my locks inside the bagel, not hanging from the wall. What exactly is going on? Why is it such a destroyer? Let me go even further to make things even clearer. If you look in the Talmud, it tells of a great scholar, Rava, who had the ability somehow, and maybe there are people today, I think I know there are people today who have this ability, to walk through a cemetery, and just by being near that corpse, the energy that came out of it, he was able to decipher how that person died. That is the power that our ancestors had. Maybe there are people today, I know two of them, who do have that ability. Take it or leave it. But he does say something very interesting. He says in the Talmud that 99% of those people died because the evil eye was on them. That's what he says. It's a very famous Talmud verse. So what exactly is it? So to understand what it is and what it isn't, let's have a look. Now we know what it can do. Let's have a look at a very famous piece of Torah from Pirkei Avot. And there is a great sage called Rabbi Yehoshua. And Rabbi Yehoshua says the following. Ayin hara, the evil eye. Yetzer hara, evil inclinations. V'sinat habriyot, and hating people. Motziat adam min olam, take people out of this world. Now, to take people out of this world, not as like, wow, you just took me out of the world, man. It's like, it can kill you. He's saying it in a very, very nice way. Let's go through those three again. Ayin hara, having a bad eye. Yetzer hara, doing bad things. And sinat habriyot and hating people. Those three things are killers. They can kill the person doing them. And unfortunately, the person they're being done to. And when we talk about killing people, we literally mean, in Judaism, kill them. Like, get them out of this world. And if we don't, it could be taking their money away. It could mean taking their possessions away. It means they could lose their jobs and all the goodness in this world. So how's it created? Says one of the great commentators, the Rabbein Yona, who lived in Gerona, Spain, many years ago. He says, let me explain to you what this Ayin Hara is, and then we're going to put our heads together, try to work out what's going on over here. And I read in Hebrew, if you don't mind, and I'll translate it as I go. Misha ona samech b'chalko. There are people in this world who are not happy with what they have. V'oyin et chaveiro. And they use their eye to look at their friend to see what they have, which they don't. Ha'ashir menu matayesha gemohu. They look at their rich friends and say, when am I going to be rich like that? That becomes their obsession. Now, we here don't know anyone like that. But there are people out there who are obsessed not with what they have, but with other people. V'ugorem ralatzmod, such a person brings great evil upon themselves, v'chaveiro, and onto that person. Now that's weird. We're not saying this person went and stole that Ferrari. We're not saying that person went and stole those things. There is some, and this is a course on Kabbalah mysticism, some supernatural force. I'll explain to you what it is, don't worry. I'll make it very clear to you very soon. But there is some supernatural force that enters into the world which can damage that individual. That's how most people understand it. Avir ole min ha-machshava. Now, the only way to translate this is some air, avir, goes up from this person's head, hahi, the sorech et ha-dvarim, and burn up that person's things. Sho'ayim behem in ha-rach, which that person looked at with evil eye. Says the Rebbeinu Yom, this whole ayin ha-ra thing that we've spoken about from the time of Sarah to Jacob's children, when they went through the different gates, to Moses counting coins and not counting people, is because there is a disease that exists in the world, and this disease is a killer. And what is that? Jealousy. Jealousy. I look at what someone else has, and I'm like, well, if I had a car like that, and if I had a house like that, and a nose like that, and hair like that, or hair at all, then I could be happy. How come they get it? Why did they get the great job with all the money? I'm smarter than them. I went to a better school. How come I can't drive a Ferrari? No, I'm actually asking, why can't I drive a Ferrari? Why not? Rabbi one on Ferrari? You know it's me. Think Yiddish, dress British. Why can't I? Besides the fact that my kids won't fit in the glove compartment, that's not him or them. They have it, I want it. Now, once I go and try to take that thing, we're dealing with something completely different. That's stealing. That's not a nice discussion. Just the desire for that thing could cause, and we'll see how in a second, could cause that person's stuff to be taken from them. And it could actually mean that life is taken from them as well. I will quote for you an English translation of the Chazon Ish, one of the great Jewish leaders who lived in Israel the last generation. And he writes that one of the mysteries of creation is the ability of man, by means of his intellect, to unleash hidden forces. Sounds like an episode of Lost. That was tension. In everyday existence. We don't realize the power we have in our minds and our words. Man's thought processes alone can cause physical things to be destroyed. In the instance of the Mishnah, which you just quoted, when a person experiences excessive agitation, now those words are chosen, excessive agitation over successful people and want their stuff, he places them in extreme danger. Now the Chazon Ish was not a person to use hyperbole. If he says extreme danger, he means it. I don't fully understand at this point. Why could me look at that person's car or wife? I understand if a person wants his wife or wants to have something to try to have an affair with them, God forbid, or a person sees someone else's car or their wallet and tries to get it. Now, here, the just the thought process, that is something to destroy people. That's wild stuff. How can that be? And truth is, it's not so wild. Now, I'll give the explanation, and then we're going to revisit all these other occasions in Jewish history. Check this out. It works like this. We know there's something called prayer. What is prayer? Prayer is the ability. Now, if you really think about it for a second, I mean, you'll do it sometimes. I think the recent Pew study said 92% of people will pray at some times in their lives. Maybe not regularly, but at some point. So everyone here at some point is praying. That, according to Judaism, actually works. Something is happening. What is happening? I'm putting into my head the need for something. I then open my mouth, by the word of Judaism, you have to speak out prayer, but maybe thought could work, we really should speak it out. And that prayer goes somewhere. Does anyone know where it goes? Interestingly enough. According to Kabbalah, it goes through the Western Wall, which is the entry point for all Jewish prayers, where, no matter where you are in the world. And by the way, Hebron is the place where the souls of all dead people go as well, right? Both of these. So it goes there, and then it goes to heaven somewhere. So let's say you have someone like myself, Rabbi Lawrence. And Rabbi Lawrence wants that Ferrari. He wants that big, pimped-up automobile, shiny red, with the spinning rims and the light underneath it. Kind of a blue light they have on the gun, right? And I'm like, God, this! enough with the Honda. I'm done. I mean, I love the Japanese, but I need something new. Give me a Ferrari. That's a prayer. And here's the weird thing. That prayer is answered. It goes through some channel. Depends how it's said, and when it's said, and why it's said, and it goes up to a place, and that prayer is answered. How could that be? I'm a driving Ferrari. When I was 7 years old, I asked for a Ferrari, I promise you. Where's my big red car? Answer is, God sometimes says, no, it's not right for you. You couldn't afford it. And if you had it, you couldn't afford the insurance. And if you did have it, your wife would only leave you, thinking you're absolutely crazy. Right? Therefore, then you don't have it. And I'm like, it's not fair. I want it, I want it, I want it. And God says, I'm answering you. And the answer is, no. That's an answer. Now I could have a high-level prayer. I could say, I'm a single person, and I want to get married. Please, God, find me a guy who's normal in New York and Jewish. Please, it's got to be one. Just one, I can't. Give me something. Alega's freaking out. Give me something over here. I'll take anything. He's breathing. Bring him over. I don't care where he's from. He could be from that. Just bring him over. That's a prayer. And God, sometimes, we'll say no, sometimes yes. But you're always going to get an answer. It's when, why, and how. And we don't know how God works. As I told you many times before, I'm in sales, I'm not in management. But the system is, one thing we're meant to do, among all other things, is to pray and ask for things. And we'll start a new business, or start a new job. Please God, may my boss be a good person, doesn't hate me, let me do well, help me get up on time, and be enjoyable, and let me make a lot of money, and all the rest of it. And that's that. Maybe yes, maybe no, depends on the person, and what they need, not what they want. But prayer is the system. How about this? Let's say I had a prayer that was completely altruistic. I prayed for another person to do well in finding a shidduch, a marriage partner, or to get a job. Would you say that's a lower form of prayer or a higher form of prayer?
Higher.
It's higher. That's like self, it's me, ahead. It's all about me, me, me. That's all living. But if I can step out of that and make it into someone else, that's considered to be a very, very great thing. And by these little side points, since we're talking about prayer, but that's not really a discussion this evening, there's a side point I will say that there is advice from the sages, which goes back all the way to Abraham, actually, when his wife wanted to give birth. And Abraham prayed for a certain king who had a disease that didn't allow him to pass certain things from his body. He prayed for this king, and then Abraham became pregnant straight away. And the commentators say, those two events are related. If you pray for someone else, you get answered first. Nane tchila. That's what it says. So we know that's a much higher. That means if you want to find a good job or a good husband, find someone in as similar a situation as you are in and pray for them. That's the best way to do it.
That's what they say.
Okay. So I know I pray for someone else and I'm doing a great, 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 great thing. Is it possible that a person could wish bad upon their friends? Could you imagine that? Is there a situation where a person could say, how come they get the car? How come they get the house? How come they get the boyfriend, the girlfriend, the money, the shoes, the pocketbook, the hair, the nose, the chin, everything up? Is it possible that a person could say that? In a moment of weakness, or maybe in a moment of strength, unfortunately. You can imagine that. That people want bad. Here's the weird thing. Check this out. That is a prayer. It goes up and is listened to. Which means the following. And this is the best way to picture it. And it's not my analogy. I'll give it to you anyway. Imagine that everyone has a book in heaven. And that book has on it all the good things we do and everything we have and what we do with those things we have. Physical things and non-physical things. It has on there our IQs. It has on there our personalities. It has on there our power of speech. a power to do kindness. Everyone has their own levels, right? It's like, you know, the music way. Everyone's got their own little level that they have in those areas. Some people are very, very smart. Some people are very, very stupid. Some people have a lot of money. Some people have no money. Imagine all of that stuff was written on a book. Imagine that when I pray, God is able to say, you want more money? No problem. Takes out the eraser, or nowadays the Levi, goes over the cursor, deletes it, and makes me $60,000 a year, $260,000 a year, sound good, right? $260,000 a year. Is that amazing? It's gone up, and the book is open, and this is the analogy given. And everything is reviewed. It happens by the way in Rosh Hashanah, but right through the year it can be examined. Let's say that someone is jealous of another person of what they have, and they make a prayer. How come they get it? So this is the scary part. That book is opened, and there's a judgment on that person. And by the way, you don't want that. That is the IRS coming to visit and checking out your accounts one-on-one. You don't want to go there. Because if they're in that book, they're like, you know what? I did give them a lot of money, and they didn't use it for any good. You're making a good point. It could, heaven forbid, be taken away. I did give them a really amazing brain, and they didn't use it for the good. I gave them this amazing power of speech, and all they're doing is gossiping and talking trash and gossip girl and guy about everyone else. You know what? Maybe I'll remove that power. I gave them this amazing job. They could have made a lot of money. They could have spent it on a nice home, and they could have done lots of good things with it, and done a lot of chesed, and a lot of acts of kindness, and they didn't. You made a good point. It could be that person's prayer goes up and changes it all. And trust me, you don't want to go there. Now, let me be clear when I say this. You're not expected in Judaism to be poor. There is no mitzvah to have no money. I'm constantly having that mitzvah repeated to me by my wife. There's no mitzvah to have no money. You got to pay for your education. You got to pay for your booze, your shabbat, your cars, your books. No problem having lots of money. The question is, do you flaunt it? That's the question. And the answer is, don't. You want to fly under the radar. And you want to make sure that everything you have, every ability, every possession you have, to some degree, you're using for some positive force. Because if you don't, heaven forbid, it could be that someone you know, heaven forbid, never happened to anyone here, could come along, talk trash, and that thing will be removed from you. I happen to know many people, very personally, who've had a lot taken from them. And I honestly believe it was because of the iron arrow. Now, how could they have protected themselves? That's a very, very fair question. Could they have? And the answer is, well, if there's a challenge, then there's probably a way to get out of it. If God creates a certain spiritual system, which we'll describe it, it's not a physical system, it's a spiritual system, we're going to assume there's a way out. So what is that way out? So number one, you don't need to have the biggest and the best ever. So a guy comes to the JC, he's got a great promotion, and he came to me, and he's talking cars. I can choose cars, I'm a gunner. I can talk cars. I can talk like the big cars, I shop lots of kids, I can talk nice cars. I don't stay in this car and that car, and I'm like, that's a nice car. But you don't need that. You don't need that. You can go one down. I know you can afford it. I know you don't want it. Who doesn't want it? Just turn the volume down a little bit. You don't want everyone looking at that thing. Saying war. Now, it's tough because we guys, we like that. We want to be going down the street, we want to be looking good. Hey, girls want to look good as well. That's okay. You can look very, very attractive for what you have and what you wear, but you don't want to be too attractive. That's the difference. Be very, very attractive. Think Yiddish dressed British. No problem. But not too attractive. You don't want to stand out. You want to be part of the community. You don't have the biggest house. They're the biggest car. Now, if you're in a community where everyone has those cars, then it's okay. You go to some Jewish communities, everyone's driving a big fat Mercedes, right? You go to some communities, they've all got a BMW. Okay, so at that point, is it the 5 Series, is it the 7 Series, the 11 Series, is it the convertible roof? Then it all moves on to a much higher level. Depends who you are and where you are. That's number one. Number two, this is just as important. And this, by the way, is repeated in Judaism, and people are so unaware of this law. It's frustrating. But it's repeated so many times in Jewish thought, in Jewish stories, in Jewish history. You want to make yourself friends with good people among the best people. Now, it sounds obvious, right? Who wants to be friends with a nasty person? But most of you can probably look back at your lives and pick someone who you've got in your life as like, you know, that person was always looking at me. They're always eyeing on my stuff. And I don't feel comfortable around. You know what I'm talking about? You just got wife and friends like that. Let me be very clear with you. There's no myths about that person as a friend. Stay away from them. Defriend them on Facebook. De-Twitter them. De-Ayn Aram. I don't know. Maybe it's not. There's no myths. So who says? Who says you have to hang around with bad people? And the people say to me, then who's to be friends with them? I'm like, that's not your problem. That's their problem. Doesn't mean it should be you. Hang around with good people who want the best for you. And that means, by the way, and when you're single, I'll patronize you a bit, but when you're single, it's a little bit different because you live somewhere, you live, it's also important. But once you get married and have kids, your kids start playing together, and then you're stuck in this, like, bubble community, and so go to school, and then there's a lot of enmeshment. At that point, it becomes a lot more important, the schools that your kids to, and the synagogue you go to, and the way you work, and what you do. Then it really kicks in. Tirchak mishachin ra, said Tom Hicks. Stay away from bad people. You know who they are. Don't go near them. It could be someone you're stuck with. You're at work, and there's a girl who's always like, Stay away from her. If she's giving you, what's it called again? Letter Z formation, what's that thing? I don't know what it is. If he's giving you some attitude, stay away from her. Who said you were best friends with her? You did not some guy. Because he has got money to do it, doesn't he? Stay away from them. Mix with good people. Choose a good person to marry. That's obvious. But one thing to look out for, and it sounds weird, I've had people ask me this before, and when I talk about, you know, all my talk, all like all roads lead to Rome, all my talks about the dating. Look at who your potential spouse is friends with. Many times I'll be dating someone. How's that guy? Yeah, he's a nice guy. What are his friends like? They're jerks. He's probably a jerk as well then. If he hangs around with them. I mean, if Jonathan is not. Right? What's she like? Yeah, she's like, come nice. What are friends like? Oof. Shallow. Couldn't rinse the glass. That's how shallow they are. Are you? Maybe it's a sign of contact. So you should be actually looking to see who people hang with, who are their friends. Because good people attract good people. And of course, bad people attract bad people as well. And you want to be in a positive, spiritual, mental, emotional environment. The community you choose could affect your life in a very, very real way. That's why you see people saying, Bli Ayin Hara. They'll start with, how many kids do you have? I know people, by the way. They ask you, how many kids you have? Right? They won't tell you. There was a lady I know, and she must have had 60 grandkids, something like that. No one even knows, actually. And I once said to her, I was a young guy, I said, so how many grandchildren do you have? She would say, a goodly amount. Is her answer. A goodly amount, which means heck of a lot. But never said it. And when we count Jews, we don't count the 1, 2, 3. We use words of 10. That is the verse that says, God should redeem your people, and bless your descendants. You want to put in their descendants. Why? Because if I sit and whoa, how many Jews there are? There's one, and there's two, and there's three. Ooh, we don't want to go there. And when those Jews went into Egypt, Jacob's sons, he says, if everyone sees you together, they're like, whoa, look at that family. Why can't my family be like that? Finer us there. And Hagar was in Sarah's face. You've been married for all these years. There's obviously something deficient upon you. The Anara came out. Eventually she lost that baby. Had a child afterwards. You don't mess with this stuff. You can also use Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz, by the way.
grown up that shame, and King Amalek, along with Moses, left him in the hurts.
And he'll be on an Israel trip with us. Because he has camp people, happy camp people, on our buses, they know the secret. We all give you numbers and shout off. Am I walking around 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Why would I do that? Because it's nauseating to walk up and down a bus counting. And I'm always moving seat at the last second. But besides that, it could bring up our Aynara. Maybe yes, maybe no. I don't know how it works, but I don't want to go there. I do not want to go there. Okay. I want to pull this together a little bit, and let's talk about the various items and emblems. The fish. The eye. Anyone seen the eyeball? Anyone with the blue bracelet with the eyeball? Who's got one of those?
Very good.
So just hold that up for a second. So we see over here. Can you look at those eyes? What do those eyes look like to you? Those look like human eyes. They look like fish eyes. That's right. They look like fish eyes. And this goes back to someone who was so spiritually advanced that we're told, according to our tradition, that the Ayin Hara had no power upon him or his descendants. And who was that? And his name was Yosef HaTzadik, Joseph, of the technical green coat. It was red and yellow, green and blue. Joseph, we're told, the Ayin Hara couldn't penetrate. Why not? So it goes like this. Check out this amazing idea, and then we'll see our obsession with fish in Judaism, eating it and hanging it from our walls. Joseph had a certain challenge in life. He had a very beautiful woman who was actually his boss's wife who was after him. I want to say after him, I don't mean to give him a race, I mean to have children with him. And she saw astrologically that she was going to have a descendant through him. And she was right. She was. But it wasn't through her, it was through her daughter who ended up marrying Joseph. We put it. So Joseph has a boss. His name is Potiphar. Lives in Egypt. Potiphar has a wife. Potiphar's wife somehow has the power of astrology, and she divines to her. So she was right. By the way, it always happens. They're right and they're wrong. That she would have a descendant through him, but that descendant wasn't going to come through her. It was going to come through her daughter. She did not realize that. So she tries to seduce him. Actually, she tries to rape him. And we're told that all the years, and we're told that possibly Joseph knew as well that he would have a descendant through her as well. But it wasn't so clear how. She tried to seduce him again and again and again to the point where the Torah commentators call her the bear because she kept trying to jump on him. Eventually she has her chance. It's one of the Egyptian holidays. Everyone's out. He's the one in the house. She goes in. She tries very, very hard to seduce him. He doesn't even look in her direction. He runs out. As she does, she rips the clothes off. By the way, Joseph, you should know, was considered to be one of the most handsome men in all Jewish history. So much so that Rashi, here's Rashi again, says that when he would walk down the street in Egypt, girls would jump onto brick walls to catch a glimpse of his face. That's how good looking he was. That he was always able to control. To control many Jewish beautiful women as well. He was the most handsome man in Jewish history. He was always able to control his eye because he knew that wasn't the way he had to go. He knew that he came from a certain lineage, that he couldn't do this with these women, and he had to wait for the right person at the right time, which he did. And he controlled his eye. The blessing he received for doing that is written in the Torah itself. Follow with me for a moment. It was Ben Parat Yosef, Ben Parat Ale Ayin. Which means, you, Joseph, are the son of grace, who are very good looking. Everyone wants to just catch a glimpse of that shade of punim. And you are above the eye. So the Torah is above the eye. And above the eye. And that means that he was able to control his thoughts and never use his eye at looking at people saying, why can't I have that? There he is, estranged in his family, sold by his brothers, put into prison, accused wrongly of rape, spends years in prison, and never once turns around and says, how come he gets out of prison and I'm stuck in here? How come he gets that and I'm stuck in here? How come they have their family? He accepts everything and he is blessed that this force for the Ayin Hara cannot grab him. And it passed on to his descendants. He has two sons. Who are his sons? Menashe and Ephraim, two boys. Those two boys actually both got portions of land in Israel, though they're grandchildren of Jacob, not sons. And these two boys were blessed with words that I sing to my children every single night. Don't know the song we sing to our Jewish children every single night? Amalach Hagoel Uti. May, this is how Jacob blessed them, may the angel that protects and redeems me, Yevarach Et Anarim, may he bless these two children, V'yigul Rov, and may they, now this is a weird word, Yigul Rov. And if you look at the translation, it says, may they be blessed with plenty. But that would be yigdu. It says yidgu. It changes the letters. Yig, though, or gadol is big. That is dagol. What's dag?
Fish.
May they be like fish. Which means what? Well, there's a lot of fish. I mean, we want to have lots and lots of gifts and braggies and have the generations go out with lots and lots of juice. But as well as that, he was saying, may they be like fish. What fish? They're underwater. They're not seen. You don't even hear. The only mammal, I believe, in the animal kingdom that doesn't make a sound. They're completely silent. We want to be like fish. And by the way, as a side point, that we see that fish were not even affected in Noah's flood. The Ayin Hara came into the world because everyone was stealing from everyone else, but the fish were not affected. They were able to live through that experience somehow. Be like fish. We take that fish and we're like, hello, I love one of these. Do you need to have a silver fish hanging from your neck, hanging from your car, the mirror? Probably not. Do you have fish eyeballs around your wrist? Probably not. If you want to, it's okay. As long as you don't think that fish bracelet can save you from this, as long as you don't think that fish head can save you from all of this, red string, what's up with that? Now here it gets a little bit murky. So the fish thing there is a source for. Yeah, source for the fish. There is a source for this. For the red string, there's not too much. But I dig, and dig some more. And I did find one, actually my wife found it. I did find one commentator, and actually I found it, my wife found it, in a pregnancy book, a Jewish pregnancy book, which are the laws of pregnancy and childbirth. According to Judaism, if a woman is pregnant, and this is by the way accepted in the Jewish world, there is an inyan. Now, the word inyan is an interesting word. It doesn't mean halakha, and it doesn't mean minhag. Halakha is law, that means you've got to do it. And minhag is it's custom, which is a good thing. Inyan means something you do. And there's no better way to say it. Some people do. It's an inyan. There's a certain thing to it. To wear red ruby earrings when a person is pregnant. And then I saw another source which I looked up, and it says over there that there is an idea to wear a red bracelet on a baby the first few days of its life. Now, to understand this, there's a whole different discussion which I'm not going to go into now. There's a whole area of Kabbalah, just entertain me for 30 seconds with this. There is a certain spiritual force, it's a female, who was actually, according to Kabbalah, the first wife of Adam before he married Eve. And so negative is this force, we don't even say her name. Because like you're Jewish, you realize this, if you say a certain name, it gives it power, so you don't even say it. Such an idea of Kabbalah. Her name is, because of an L, okay? And remember, cheers. Do you remember Fraser, her wife? Right? I'm talking about Lil, right? Something? Right? Okay. So that name, there's a Jewish magazine called that. I don't know why they would use that name. But if you were looking at Jewish Kabbalistic sources, and actually so many other cultures, that is the worst representation of what femininity is actually meant to be. There's plenty of what masculinity is meant to be, but this is like what femininity. So that's a bad name. We don't even say it so bad. There is an idea that she comes in a spiritual force and she wants to take the baby. Maybe yes, maybe no. I do not know. But there is a custom to put. Moshe says this, and some say it. Maybe people will not do it. They will put a red string around the baby's wrist. Yes, maybe yes, maybe no. Has anyone seen the hand? Alright? I don't mean the hand. Everyone goes in New York. Talk to the hand. No. There's the hand. You ever see that? was called the living exhibit of like fish and ants. So you see the hand? Now that is something. What does chams actually mean? Chams Hebrew, chamesh. Okay. So chamesh, there is something to that. Just find source for it. There are many verses that refer to God's hand protecting us. Okay, at times of difficulty and danger, your right hand is glorious in power. Your right hand is dashed the enemy, symbolized strength and protection. So the Lord has placed his hand, and the hand, by the way, in Kabbalah, you know the body is split into two. Are you aware of this? Okay, there's the right side and the left side. It's Kabbalah, of course, aware of this. The right side is Chesed, right, is kindness, going to Kabbalah. The left side is Gevura. Therefore, right always precedes left. Okay? One of the things my rabbi told me when I left the chuppah was leave with your right foot. Okay? Many people put hand, only when they put the hand on right and left. Many people will not do this. Okay? This is mixing those two sides. There's a certain line that goes right down the body, it says, goes divides the tongue, splits us in two. There's the right side, which is goodness, the left side, which is not. We do most mitzvot by using our right hand. Okay? You'll also notice that many people, but many items of the clothing are put right on left. There are, if you look at most men's shirts, if you look at shirts left over right, there are people who specifically manufacture shirts and wear shirts that are right over left. Good money to be made in the right over left shirt business. I'm not one of those people, but I'll be willing to open a business if anyone has a capital. That one, it's Kabbalah, it is not halacha. I say it again, this is not Jewish law. There are certain inyanim that count on Kabbalah, and that's one of them. So right always represents the idea of God's mercy and God's kindness and God's putting his hand in Kabbalah. And there's many verses that do this, therefore, show them the hands. Right, don't come in here. I've got God with me right now. In my home, my wife has a little Sephardic shrine where she has certain gifts that we got, and she has a thing. People up in the house, does it help? Does it not? That's what you use as a bat to hit people with, right? Give them a hand. Maybe yes, maybe no. I don't know. For the sanctions. Okay? Paying more than 20 cents for a red string is absolute insanity. I don't care if it was walked 5,000 times around Kevin Rachel. It is absolutely ridiculous. If you want to give money to charity, and it's a very good cause, not some angry lady by the Kotel lady. Why is she so pissed off? What is up with her? Why is she so angry? You're making millions. You're making more than us put together. You don't buy like, you don't want to make. I go for you. I'm like, back off, grandma. Whoa, watch it. Like the lasso you with those red strings and pull it away. Maybe yes, maybe no. We don't go there. If you want to give money to charity and we want to give you a red string, what can I say? You want to put a red string? Probably no problem doing it. There is one rabbi I spoke to who says there is a problem wearing it. And you see, many Jews do not do it because you're following the way of the Amorites. There was a certain nation who got very, very involved, and Egyptians as well, in this kind of sorcery stuff. And they don't do it, not because it's bad, but it can lead you to do some crazy stuff and take you away from your Jewish heritage, and end up becoming, and you'll end up becoming a Jimbu, a Jewish Buddhist. Right? They start somewhere. Right? They got to start somewhere, these people, and you'll end up completely leaving Judaism, and that's the end of that. So some commentators will say, stay away from it. The Rambam's one of them. He says all this stuff is complete nonsense. Stay away from it. And the Ramban, different person, he says it's all true, it has real power, but don't do it. Because it can lead you onto other paths which are not Judaism. So it's like a slippery slope. First the red string, then it's the red Ferrari, and then off you go. Right? But it's a certain slippery slope that a person should stay away from. I'd like to finish by some questions, which I hope I have. There is one other verse in the Torah that discusses this, and it gives you the reason to stay away from the sun. That's the name of this book, which was written by a Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov, has anyone heard of his name before? Great shame now. He's one of the, actually, is the leading Kabbalist in Israel. Now, there's a lot of garbage books of Kabbalah. This happens to be one of the only ones that I know. It's actually written in Hebrew, called Tamim Tiyah, which is Hebrew from the verse I just told you, which means you should be perfect with the needs of God. Okay? It's translated in English, Faith and Folly. And just to give you a flavor, I've met him before, a very great rabbi, has very interesting life story. Just give you the chapters so you appreciate a little bit of where it's coming from. Amulets, angels, animal language, asking a child, casting lots, checking names of a bride and groom, communicating with the dead. My wife does it every morning with me. Demons, dream requests, incantations, learning from Amagoshi, whatever that is, meditation, omens, all the stuff is described in there, the do's and the don'ts, mostly the don'ts. Why I mention this one, if you're interested in this course, go put it together. Number two, it's called Come and See and Be Perfect with God. And that's what the Torah says. The Torah says that we can get involved in this stuff, and we can get involved in astrology, and we can go to psychics, and I've met people who have, and there's definitely things I personally met people who've told me things about myself. There's no way they could have known that without speaking to someone, actually only me. This power is. According to most commentators, the Rambam, the Beit Chaya, or most commentators, the Rambam, they say this stuff does exist. The Rambam says it's all charlatans, it's just people trying to make money. But most of the commentators say it is true. I know someone who went to a psychic as a young child and told them, when you are 52, you're going to kill someone. He told them. First he got older, completely forgot it until he got 52, and he ran someone over. Completely accident. What is the good of that? What does that do to a person? If that is their fate, who knows? God wants the world, however. What we're meant to be is say, what the future holds, I don't know. My concern is now. That's why the word ayom, today, is mentioned more than the future in the Torah. It's today. What am I going to do about it today? And that's who we are. We are the people who live the moment in the present, not freaking out about
Why
is it such a special Indian to get the string at Kever Rachel? It's a great question. I've heard a few answers to it. I'll give you one. Rachel Imenu is considered to be the archetypal matriarch of prayer for people in difficulties and challenges. She also died in childbirth. There is an idea, actually one of the reasons that she died in Bethlehem, which is outside Jerusalem, is that when the Jewish people were put into exile, they passed by her grave, and she would pray for them. So she has certain segulas, they say, she has certain precious powers, so maybe that's one of the reasons that they use that as the launching point for the red string production industry. Having said that, visiting Kever Rachel and praying there, not to her, but praying to God on her merits, a very powerful and amazing to do, especially for women. Women who are not able to have children will specifically go to that particular location in order to pray. So the certain things occur, babies, children, that kind of stuff. So maybe I think you wrap it around there, maybe it'll help. They say wrap around seven times. The idea of seven revolutions, anyone know? Going seven times around something, where does that come from? 7 days of the week, yeah. What are the sevens? The bride walks around seven times. The groom, why don't you do that? Where does that learn out from? What story in the Bible? Come on. Bible story, you should know this. Who walked around what in order to bring the walls down? Right, so we know the Jews walked around, some of the Jews, by the way, walked around the walls of Jericho when they went into the land of Israel. Those seven times break down walls, okay? This is one of the reasons that a Jewish woman walks around seven times. It's not the idea of servitude, which is complete nonsense, not read anywhere, and it's complete foolishness when people ask me that. I mean, I don't say that to them, but I'm telling you right now. The idea of women is now breaking down the walls and creating a new life together. It's a very beautiful tradition. I once had a woman who said to me, at my wedding, I walk around him 3 times, he walks around me 3 times, then we walk around each other once. It's like a... Like, when are you going to get married? Personally, I said, if you don't want to do it, that's okay. So don't change the man. Don't change it. If you don't want to miss it out, it's okay. It's not married without it, but don't change it. Right? It's not foolish to do that. So that's the idea of the seven times around, and maybe they use that as well, around Kever Rachel, to spend seven times around.
You know, you're talking about
Kanahara?
Does that have to do with
the Kanahara? Right, so Kanahara is the same as Leah and Aram. Someone says to you, so, how are you doing today? So they'll say, Kenehara, I'm doing well. In other words, without Ainara. What that is a shorthand prayer, as we say, God, I'm going to say it, but I want to keep it. You know what I'm saying? So the sequel says li ayin hara or kenehara. Kenehara, I'll say in Yiddish, without ayin hara. It's exactly where it comes from. And that is something that people do. Kenehara. Yeah?
You mentioned before that our souls go back to Hebron.
Yeah.
We gave up Hebron, so how does that work?
Next. right. So Hebron, no matter who is owned by, is still a location. The Western Wall wasn't owned by us for a long time as well. Still be the focus point to do through the thousands of years. We don't need to have control over it in the physical world to have control over it in the spiritual world. Question is, how can someone's ill thoughts or jealousy, and the answer is, it can.
Override God's
prayer. Not override. People have the power of prayer, and God judges the world in a system. Every Rosh Hashanah, right, when we talk about studying synagogue, I mean, I'm there. I mean, I'm reading that stuff, right? And it's saying that this time of year, everyone's life is going to be decided. Okay? At that time, we have that power to invoke and say, God, listen, you know what? This past year, I didn't use my time for good stuff and money, but this year, I'm a little man. Give me another chance. Over at the bank account, Mom, Dad, hook me up. Bring the cash down from heaven. I'm ready. By the way, I teach something very interesting, a side point. How many times did the Ten Commandments give to the Jewish people?
Twice.
Why twice?
Moses broke it for the first time.
Why did Moses break it the first time?
Because he was very upset.
Actually, the commentators say it was a great thing to do. He did a wonderful, wonderful thing. Why did he do it? Because Jews were getting involved in terrible stuff. It says, Kabbalah, it's Ayin Hara thing. The first time the Ten Commandments were given, there was noise, there was thunder, there was lightning. Everyone knew about it. Things that come with a lot of sound and noise don't get to keep. The second time it was given, Kippur, there was quiet, thunder, and lightning. Those that are a little close were out of here. Do you get it? Not everyone has to find out about it. Keep it. All right. Oh, God.
Just one more question. You had mentioned earlier about, you were talking about the right hand, I guess.
Yes.
Were you implying that the red string should be worn on the right hand then? Because the question. At the Kabbalah Center, they had mentioned that if you were to wear the red string, that it would be on the left hand because that's the side where the positive energy would go through. But I just wanted some clarification. I just wasn't sure how it was interpreting the person.
You didn't miss what they said, but they're talking absolute nonsense.
Okay.
There is neither hand you need to put a red string on. Having said that, they even talk even such nonsense, right. There is a bit of truth. When you give tzedakah, they say you should use your right hand to do it. There is an idea, I said, using right. In other words, they took that idea and they made a business out of it.
Is that why?
Did I just say that? Right? They came along and they said, well, the right hand, then you put the right string on. Restring, right hand, left foot, through the nose. Right? I don't care! You can put what you want to do. Right? You put your braids in it. Right? I'm sending your car out of it. Makes no difference. They're based upon our true concept that right dominates over left. Chesed should always beat Gevura. That's what they're based upon. But that is not a reason to put a red string on. Yeah.
What's the punishment for the person who's actually invoking the jealousy?
There's reward and punishment, consequences to all actions. And we're going to assume this, probably not so good. That's in the comments that both sides get heard. We're going to stop over. Oh, good. Questions or questions?
If one were to have a bad thought, are there any guidelines for how to do that? How to stop
So that's a very good question. How about the person who has the jealousy? So the commentators talk about that in length. I come over to it now. It's all to do with happy with what you have, be sameh for helko, which is its own area of Judaism, of how to appreciate what you have. And that's its own realm. But there are, if you want, I'll reference a book. It's a very good book called Gateway to Happiness by Zelie Bliskin. He gives you a thick book, very readable, not academic, very good to read, and he tells you how to be happy with what you have without looking at everyone else, see what they have. So interestingly enough, most bad thoughts do seem to judge the Ten Commandments. Lust is something most actually does. If you're happy with what you have, who you are, then probably 90 of your backups will probably go well. Not that you would. All right, see you next week for the last class. We'll be talking about miracles.